You are listening to Punk News Podcast, recorded live outside Panera Bread. No sponsorship, just keeping you up to date. Episode number 258. Features editor John Gentile coming at you live for the third week in a row in front of Panera Bread down in beautiful Carlisle, Pennsylvania, outside Harrisburg. I'm looking at the beautiful Target. I'm looking at a bank. Looking at Bed Bath & Beyond. I'm looking at Ross Dress for Less, where I got a cool pair of sneaks. And I'm just hanging outside the Panera Bread. I'm a regular here. They know me. Next week we'll be back to normal. But as always, I'm here with news editor Mark Little. Mark Little down in Florida. What's happening, man?
What's going on, John? I hope you don't get hurt out there in the parking lot.
Panera Bread's a rough scene, man. I'm from the streets outside Panera Bread. And I'm also here with Adam White out there in Niagara, way up north, loving the beautiful snow, going over Niagara Falls in a barrel. Adam White, when's the last time you went over Niagara Falls in a barrel? Last week?
We try to not do it too much during the summer because we got to let the tourists do it. We don't have Panera Bread in Canada, eh?
You don't? I mean...
No, I ate at one in Gainesville once, but.
What is the national Canadian coffee shop? Starbucks?
Is that a stupid question? Tim Hortons is the national Canadian.
I've heard that name. I don't even know what Tim Hortons is, honestly.
Really? You don't? I thought that was just common knowledge. Like, that was just a stereotype.
It's going to make two of us, actually, Adam.
It's a coffee shop? Is that what it is?
Really? You guys don't know this?
What is a Tim Hortons, Adam? I'm asking you, what is a Tim? Why won't you tell me what a Tim Hortons is, Adam?
I thought everyone knew this. This is such an obvious thing. Oh, my God. Is it
no one knows what a Tim Hortons is.
Okay, yeah, all right.
To me, it's the Starbucks of Canada, right?
No. It's more of like the Dunkin' Donuts of Canada. If Dunkin' Donuts had the... let's say, I don't know. If Dunkin' Donuts kind of had the penetration of, say... McDonald's and Subway combined, if like all the Subways and all the McDonald's were Dunkin' Donuts, that's kind of what Tim Hortons is like in Canada. Like, there's literally one every three blocks in any direction that you go.
What do they sell there? Coffee?
Yeah, I mean, the coffee, but not coffee in the trying to be upscale about it sense that, like, Starbucks does. More of the working Joe's cup of coffee kind of thing. But everyone up here is addicted to it because there's probably cocaine in it. And we all know it's not good, but we drink like 50 of them a week. And it's not good. It's not really good coffee or anything like that, but it's basically
comforting.
I guess. I mean, it's an addiction. We're all addicted to it. Part of it is pride. We feel that we have to drink it or our country's going to fall apart and wolves are going to get us. On the other hand, we are all habitually, it's like a mass national psychosis. And I totally acknowledge that it's crappy coffee and that we probably shouldn't drink it all the time, but we do. And, I don't know what to do about that, but that's the way that we live up here.
If you're in Canada, what would be the Tim Hortons alternative?
No, well, I mean, like Starbucks, honestly, we have lots of Starbucks up here, but like that's it really. I mean, like, as far as chain coffee places go, I mean, to be honest, like McDonald's is giving them a run for their money with, cause like McDonald's coffee has gotten less gross over the years. But I am dumbfounded that we're having this conversation because Tim Hortons is such a cultural institution up here that like we assume that you all know about this.
We don't, Adam. We don't. Can I tell my funny Starbucks story? So I've been stealing internet. Well, I've been buying iced tea and internet for the past 3 weeks now. And I was in Starbucks on Monday, I think it was. Maybe it was Tuesday. And right before me, there's this guy's about 55 in a business suit. And a lady in aerobics outfit, about 55 or so. And they're acting kind of weird. And they're like laughing. And they go up there. And the guy orders first. And they're like, welcome to Starbucks. And he's like, how do I get my order? They're like, have you never been to Starbucks before? And he's like, no. And this guy sounds American. And they're like, well, we just put your name on the cup and hand it to you. And he's like, well, how do you know it's mine? And they're like, because we put your name on it. He's like, well, how do you know my name? They're like, well, we ask you for it. And he could not comprehend how Starbucks ordering process works, right? So anyway, after they get it sort of straightened out, they ask him, what do you want? He says some bizarre drink, and then he explains that it's from Morocco, and you can only get it in Morocco. And they're like, we don't have that here. And he's like surprised that they don't have this bizarre Moroccan drink. They just told him that they only have it in Morocco. So I forget what he ordered. Like a Frappuccino or something. Not like a hot drink, one of the hot drinks. Then the lady orders a small cup of black coffee. And there's probably about six people in the Starbucks. So it's pretty, lots of room. These two stand between two people sitting right next to the Starbucks for about 10 minutes, and they're like talking and they're laughing really loud. And I get the impression it's some sort of like Tinder date or something, but I didn't really know. And so they're like really loud and these two people are really annoyed, but most people that go to Starbucks are chumps and wimps, so they don't say anything. They just kind of suck it up and took it. Where if it was me, I would have said, listen, pal, you got to move. Who knows what? Anyways, so they're like laughing and yucking it up. They're not even like making any sense. It was surreal. Then they go outside and I turn my head and I get back to what I'm doing. I look out 3 or 4 minutes later. They're like violently making out in the parking lot. And they were like making out for like a half hour. It was crazy.
And you were like, if this was Panera, this would not happen.
This would not stand at Panera. Let me tell you. So anyway, let's get to some mail. You can tell us your best Starbucks makeout stories at podcast@punknews.org. But here's some mail. This is from Lindsay. Lindsay is a longtime listener, I think. She's written a couple of times, I think. Adam, do you remember me mentioning Bow Wow Wow in the Punk News podcast? I mean, I know we did a couple of years ago, but have I recently?
I feel like we went through 2 or 3 years where you talked about nothing but Bow Wow Wow for several months.
Well, here's what Lindsay said. I was happy to hear Bow Wow Wow discussed on the podcast. I love Annabella's vocals. They're kind of similar to Ari Up, Penelope Houston, Patti Smith, the Rizzillos, and Polystyrene. As a drummer, I appreciate Bow Wow Wow's unique drum patterns that remind me of some African-style tribal drums similar to the Slits. Bow Wow Wow's music reminds me of what Melanie Griffith's character in the 80s film Something Wild would listen to, and I love that character that she plays. So have you guys ever seen Something Wild? That's actually a pretty good movie.
I think I saw Something Wild once, and it was way back in the 80s when it came out. I couldn't tell you one thing about it.
It's a total 80s book. Anyway, Lindsay continues. As far as Bow Wow Wow not being punk or punk enough, I think that's depending on your definition. A friend's band we just played with recently felt that they were a punk rock Boston review they received where they were described as not punk but moody indie. They were super bummed, and I have been trying to cheer them up all week because labeling a band can be really important to people in that band. I think Keith Morris, because he listens to all kinds of music and doesn't dress punk, often describes punk as an attitude in interviews. He recently was on the Chris Kirkwood podcast. Labels can be limiting, and the Minutemen sound differently than almost every other punk band, but I consider them to be one of the most punk bands because they were so original and not trying to dress a certain way or trying to be identified, and they were breaking all the rules and had heart. I enjoy punk news coverage of punk and artists that have punk ethos or attitude or something that relates them to the genre. However, I do wish you guys would go in the other direction a bit more and cover hardcore and crust punk bands because they are out there, especially in Boston. Since you go so far into pop punk, no wave, post-punk, and sometimes even hip-hop and metal, it would be great to hear more about hardcore bands that are touring that we should see. It's because of you guys I found out about Crazy in the Brains. We booked them to play a Boston show, and we are working towards playing with them in New Jersey soon. Also, does Adam White like Black Cat Attack from Canada? They are another female fronted band who we have played with in Massachusetts, and they are super fun. How about No Problems from Canada? And we talk about them. They're good. And so thanks for writing in, Lindsay. So first of all, Adam, have you heard of Black Cat Attack from Canada?
I have not, but I'm looking them up right now. They have an incredible album cover that is kind of like the Dark Side of the Moon album cover, but instead of a prism, it's a piece of pizza. Which is great. They have a really cool logo. And they're from Oshawa, so I should check them out because they're an Ontario band. So no, I've never actually heard this band, but I'm going to listen to them as soon as we're done on this show.
You know what? Let's play. Screw it. Let's play one of the songs on the Punk News podcast.
Yeah. All right.
Let's do it.
Hold on. Let's figure out what I can get here.
While you do that, let me address Lindsay.
Yes, you do that.
Lindsay said that she wants to hear more hardcore and more crust punk on punk news, and I agree that I think we should cover more hardcore, more crust punk, and more of that 389 records, kind of where hardcore punk and death metal kind of cross over. I wish we did cover more of the heavier stuff. It just seems, for whatever reason, the writers that we get are really more interested in emo, pop punk, or core punk, of course. We seem to have trouble getting people that are really, really into the harder stuff. I know our new writer, Keenan, is into the harder stuff. But if any of the listeners out there want to contribute, you know, reviews of hardcore punk or crust punk, I'll definitely run those reviews. I'm always trying to recruit writers that want to cover that. So if you're a writer, if you're a young writer and you want to get some experience and you want to write about hardcore punk or crust punk, send me an email at johng@punknews.org. There's definitely a spot for you at Punk News where we can cover more of the harder, nastier stuff. I'm always looking for that. So thanks for writing in, Lindsay. And Adam White, do you have that tune primed and ready? What do we got?
Yeah. This is crazy. I've listened to 9 seconds of this song and it kicks my ass in the first 9 seconds. So that's pretty cool.
Let's do it.
So this is from the Black Hat Attacks album Bright Side of the Moon. The song is called Killing Spree at Zero Gravity. So here we go.
That's a good title.
It is a good title. That was Black Cat Attack, which we just played impromptu because someone wrote us in and said we should check that out, and that's good. John, before we get to the rest of the show here, I want to introduce a segment to our program here, which I'm going to call Adam's Apple Music Status Report, and I wish that I had like a jingle that could introduce it.
I'll do one for you.
Like,
it's time for Adam's Apple Music Status Report. Who wants to know the news about Apple Music? Just talk to Adam White. He's always right. It's out of sight on Adam's Apple Music Status Report.
Yeah, hi. This is Adam White. This is Adam's Apple Music Status Report. I wanted to report, having used Apple Music now for a couple weeks, that it's really fucking annoying and I hate it.
Yes.
Back to you, John.
Oh. Let's talk about Titus Andronicus.
Yeah.
This is something I think Adam White will like, even though he hates Apple Music, and I support hating all things Apple, even though I actually use an Apple laptop. Titus Andronicus, they're streaming the new album. It's called The Most Lamentable Strategy. Titus Andronicus is streaming their new album. It's called The Most Lamentable Tragedy, and I think it's a double disc concept album. It's out next week. No, it's out this next week via Merge Records. And I know Adam White's a big fan. I think Mark Little might be down. Were you guys down with the new Titus Andronicus record? Did it live up to the epic expectations set by this band and their often epic odysseys, both live and in the studio?
John, this is a record. This is not, you know, like to compare this to their prior one is they're from completely different planets. Like I was a huge fan of The Monitor, which was this band's sophomore record, I guess. Like their second, they're two records ago though. The Monitor was great. It was kind of a concept album about the Civil War, but you know, you didn't have to worry too much about that. It was chock full of good tunes. Their record that came out after that was far less ambitious. It was called Local Business. Some people liked it, some people didn't. It seemed to be pretty polarizing, but it was definitely, it was more of a conventional record, the kind of record that you would expect a band to release, where here's 9 or 10 songs that are of varying quality and there's nothing super interesting about it. It's just a record. This thing is a fucking monster. What is it, 29? 29 songs, something like that?
29 tunes.
29 songs. It's streaming on NPR right now. The stream is like what? It's close to 2 hours of stuff.
It's a jam.
Yeah, it's a lot. And at least, no, this is my opinion on it. It's pretty good. It's all really good, at least to me. It's not, it's 2 hours of stuff, and it's, you know, it's a big epic sprawling thing, but it never feels like that to me. We've talked a lot about concept albums on this show. We've talked, and we always kind of seem to bring up Green Day because they were trying to do this for a little while. My big problem with those Green Day records that came out, American Idiot and the one after that, whatever the hell it was called, is I don't find them very fun. I find them incredibly overwrought. They, you know, you have a band that's known for playing goofy little pop punk songs, and just because they're going to do something that has this built-in narrative flow to it, they decide to stop being the goofy fun band that everyone loves and start to be this dodgy, more radio rocky, mid-tempo blah kind of thing. So whenever anyone does one of these big high concept albums, it always tends to have the it always tends to have that sense of complete overblown bullshit to it. But I don't feel that when I'm listening to this. Like, yeah, this is super long given how many songs are on it, but all the songs are, you know, they're self-contained for the most part. They're pretty fun. They, you know, they move along at a good clip. Some of them are slow, and the slow ones are kind of interesting and slow, and the fast ones are fast, cool little punk songs. I mean, this is a Sandinista level of stuff that's all heaped together on this record, but I'm totally cool with it. So this feels like a big comeback to me. It feels like I could like this in the similar way to which I like The Monitor, and that's high praise because I really love that record. John, what do you think of this sucker?
This record rocks, man. This record's cool. I, as listeners know, I always like when bands do weird, daring things. Titus Andronicus have made their stock in trade to do weird, daring things. If you remember the last album, Local Business was literally about local businesses. This new one is far out. It's a double disc, and honestly, it's too much to take in one sitting. And, you know, over the past 3 or 4 years, I think in a reaction to the 90s, where every single album was 74 minutes, past 3 or 4 years, albums have been 24 to 28 minutes, which was cool. I like that. And Adam's big thing is he thinks albums should be stripped down to their most basic components or the very best parts and, you know, put the scraps on the B-sides. I think this record, more than anything, proves that there is something to be said for sheer volume, sheer mass, sheer heft. This is just too much to take in for one sitting, and that's what's beautiful about it. It's just a catacomb that you weave through. You know, maybe it's better on record. Actually, I think this is like 3 or 4 records, this album.
It's at least 3 LPs, yeah.
Yeah, that's so, you know, it's like Sandinista. Like, Sandinista isn't designed to be listened to all in one sitting. It's like, maybe today I'll listen to the dub side. Maybe today I'll listen to the punk rock side. Maybe today I'll listen to the weird disco side. I think that's how this album is. It's got a lot of different flows, a lot of different movements to it. And basically, I'm most excited that Titus Andronicus is still very punk. They play very punk shows. They represent the punk ethos, but they're not. They don't feel confined by the current punk rules out there. I think they're probably a little bit influenced by Fucked Up, who did a lot of, I mean, didn't do this previously, but kind of had the idea to do the double concept record, that kind of thing. I think it's exciting. I think this is awesome. And I wish, and I think there are, a lot of bands kind of riding this wave of punk rock, aggressive but experimental.
So I'm very tempted to break into our positivity about this and bring up Idiots on the Internet that I was reading earlier, and I don't know if I should. I don't know if it's taken away.
I don't want to give them spotlight. You know what I mean? It's just like seven idiots, you know. And why get? But, well, I mean, well, did they have nuanced criticism or are they just idiots? Well, although it can be fun just to beat up idiots too.
So.
All right, you just read it, Adam. Let's beat it.
Well, no, okay, so this actually isn't about our readers, so unlike John, I'm not baiting the Punk News audience against us. This is just, it's an interesting thing to keep seeing people complain about. I mean, for the most part, for the Punk News listeners, or the Punk News readers, they tend not to, at least not anymore. I want to say like 8-9 years ago, maybe this was more prevalent on the site. We don't tend to argue too much over the validity of something being punk anymore. You know, people don't like something on Punk News, they tell you that they hate it. They like something, they might tell you that they like it. But that seems to be the extent of it. We don't have people like arguing till they're blue in the face that something isn't validly punk. But go look up the article that's on the website Brooklyn Vegan that announces this stream. And there has to be like 4 dozen comments under it, and most of them are arguing over the fact that because Titus frontman Patrick Stickles comes from a family of wealth, or like that his father is a high-priced attorney or something like that. I don't even know.
So did Joe's drummer.
Well, yeah, but because of this, somehow, I don't know, either he's not allowed to play punk, or his, you know, the fact that he's embracing these punk ideals is somehow disingenuous. And I think it's such a fucked up argument. I think it's such a weird argument to see, like today, right? That's a thing that we're still gonna, you know, get in groups and complain about, is that we're gonna wage this odd little class war where people can't authentically play punk rock if they're not, I don't know, living in a squat and coming from poverty. I mean, there's a lot of great music that comes from people that have been in those situations. But to hear, you know, the fact that this band has a lot of hype about it, for someone to go trot out, oh, look at what this guy's parents have done, and to use that as the argument that it's not a valid thing to engage with or to listen to, is bizarre to me. Because all these other bands that we listen to and enjoy, we don't know shit about what any of their families did or what kind of money was in there. But we trot that out when we're trying to discredit a band. And it's weird because it's not consistent. Like, we're going to talk about Nightbirds in a minute. John, what do all Nightbirds' parents do?
I don't know.
Yeah. Does it matter? Apparently it matters, because we shouldn't be able to listen to this stuff and enjoy it unless they came, like, slugging out of the streets to... I don't know, right? Like, it's a completely bizarre point to argue. I don't get it. Again, maybe it was just like, maybe Brooklyn Vegan has like some usual trolls and they were just kind of doing their thing. I don't usually read the comments on that site or any site. So, hey, maybe that was what was going on. But just to see that argument, like in 2015, about something that, you know, even if it's not your cup of tea, is at least trying to do something interesting and still be a punk rock record, it seems so aggressive and counterproductive to me.
Adam, you gave me a brainstorm, Adam. Let me put forth a hypothesis, and you both can respond. The criticism, if you will, of Patrick Stickles, of Titus Andronicus, is because he comes from a wealthy family, he can't be punk. But I would posit that because he comes from a wealthy family, and generally speaking and stereotypically, punk ideals are anti-wealth. That's not always true, but let's assume they are for this argument. That if he's embracing those anti-wealth ideals, which are self-harmful to him, as opposed to punk rockers, which come from, well, you know, quote, real true punks, which come from a broke background where they want a greater distribution of wealth, Patrick is truly the more punk because he's embracing punk to his self-detriment, whereas, quote, broke punks are embracing punk to their economic interests. What do you think of that?
Hey, it's sure. as good of argument as the bullshit one that everyone seems to be making. Mark, do you see this kind of thing when you hear people talking about bands anymore?
I do. I mean, in the Philly scene and like the crust punk scene, you get this all the time.
But I think it's something else that comes with people being music fans. But Adam, you make a really good point where you say how 8 or 9 years ago you saw this a lot more on the website, where people become any more about whether or not it was valid, whether this is punk, whether this should be covered or not. I think it's kind of gotten to the point now where people don't care nearly as much. But at the same time, it's so easy to talk about that kind of thing when they're behind a keyboard. And I think that people that are talking about that are maybe not doing so much with their own selves, and maybe not doing so much with what they want to be doing with their own bands or their own dreams, that they're casting those stones, if you understand what I mean.
I've never understood the argument. So I remember a few years ago, there was a band that was getting all sorts of hype that was a female-fronted punk rock band called Be Your Own Pet. And they exploded very briefly. They had a lot of press that was going on about them. They had all the Pitchfork write-ups and everything like that. And their first record that came out was cool. I liked it a lot. It sounded good. And then I remember that everyone was jumping on this because, the lead singer of this is father is a record producer, and that must be why they're getting so much attention and blah, 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 blah. And I'm none of that has any bearing over whether I think the record sounds cool or not. And it feels to me like there's a lot of people that would, instead of actually listening to music because they enjoy it, and maybe this is where I differ from most of the punk rock world, I'll listen to music because I enjoy it. I'm not necessarily listening to music because the context in which the music was produced checks off a number of boxes that make me feel good about myself. But I don't know. It pissed me off, John. I wanted to celebrate this record, and then I went and I read some fucking internet comments.
Listen, look throughout history.
Don't let the bastards get you down, Adam.
Every time you go, somebody does something great.
That's a good Toasters song.
I actually had a great time at a Toasters concert once. I didn't even know anything about Toasters, but I took this girl I liked in it. Well, thank you, Toasters. Anyways, anytime somebody does something artistically great, it is always derided by the half-wits, the dimwits, the people that have no vision. Look at any great band. I don't care if it's Alice Cooper, if it's Led Zeppelin, if it's The Clash, it's the Sex Pistols. If you don't have haters, you're probably not being daring or challenging enough. So, anytime a band has a lot of detractors, it means they're doing something interesting. Well, not anytime, but it's a signal that you may be doing something interesting or daring. And that's just how, you can't have your cake and eat it too. You can't do something wildly daring and then have everybody embrace it. It's just not how humanity is. So the fact that something's causing both positive and negative waves, you hope to get more positive waves than negatives, but that's not always how it is. Just goes to show that they're doing something interesting. So,
great point.
Well, let's move on here because we mentioned Nightbirds, so we got to talk about Nightbirds. Nightbirds, they're streaming their contribution to the upcoming Fat Music Volume 8, Going Nowhere Fat, this song streaming over on the AV Club. The song is called Left in the Middle. You can find the link to it on Punk News right now. The song will also appear on the band's upcoming, as yet untitled record, which we actually recently featured in our rundown article of the albums that were eagerly
you need more Tim Hortons
or less Panera or something. It was featured in our rundown of Argus, I can't even talk now, which we are eagerly anticipating in the second half of 2015. Going Nowhere Fat Music Comp Volume 8, it comes out on August 7th. You should go listen to this Nightbird song because it's cool. John, you're a Nightbirds maniac.
I am a Nightbirds maniac. This track is ripping. Listen, people. This album is going to be a contender for Album of the Year. This track is everything the Nightbirds does great, multiplied by three. It's super tight. It rocks. I was surprised at how directly political it is. Nightbirds have other political songs, but I was surprised at how political on the face this song was. And I was wondering, is that the golden touch of Fat Mike, or is this just how the band wants to write a tune? I couldn't tell you. That being said, this album's going to rock. This tune rocks. Nightbirds is able to find that sweet spot where they pay classic homage to classic punk rock, but are doing something new, something fresh, something exciting. And I think it's because they know how to write a song, and plus they're awesome live. This kicks ass.
The that East Bay Ray influenced surf guitar thing that, that goes on in like a lot of these Nightbird songs. Is it never gets old to me. It always sounds cool. I love that.
Yeah, I like the song a lot, actually. I'm kind of late to the Nightbirds party. I've heard Adam Eisenberg has talked about this band a lot. I knew he's a huge fan of them. I didn't realize you were into them so much, John. I was listening to the song earlier.
I was into them first. I'm just going to say.
You know.
I will also say that Kung Fu Records recently signed Danger Friends. And all I'm going to say is who played Danger Friends on the Punk News podcast about 3 months ago and who mentioned them as the shows to see at Punk Rock Bowling. Just saying. Just saying. John G might be a little bit of a tastemaker. Just saying.
All right. Having said that, I listened to the Nightbird song earlier today, and one time led to two, led to three, and I think I probably listened to that song about seven or eight times by the time I was done. Didn't really realize that it was repeating. I love this song a lot. It's got a really cool early 80s LA vibe. It kind of reminds me of D.I. I don't know if you guys remember the song OC Life, but the first minute or so of that song, especially when the vocals kicked in, really reminded me of that. So I'm really excited to hear this record.
So John, we're going to switch gears right out of what the kind of band that Nightbirds is, and we're going to go back and talk about Ceremony here. I'm going to throw this right over to you because you've been really big on this Ceremony record. Everyone seems to hate this Ceremony record, but we got more remixes, more other material from it. So what's going on?
This Ceremony has released the second remixed song so far. This is a remix of a song called Your Life in France, and basically, it's one of these remixes. I'm glad we're mentioning this because the Titus Andronicus, Nightbirds, and Ceremony are three excellent bands to group together. Titus Andronicus are doing something wildly new, something challenging. Nightbirds are embracing the classic, but doing it very well. And then Ceremony is a band that used to be a classic hardcore band that has completely spun away from that and is doing something that they haven't done before that references old 80s post-punk. And the critics and fans have had difficulty or no difficulty at all embracing these bands for various reasons. So these are each three polarizing bands, and it's good to group them together. This remix is interesting for two reasons. First of all, it's the, I think, what they call the Lincoln Axe parable. Have you guys heard of the Lincoln Axe parable or the Lincoln Hammer parable?
No.
Basically, there was a museum that had Lincoln's hammer or axe, and the axe was the handle, the strap, and we'll just say the axe head. Well, the strap disintegrated, so they added a new strap. And the question is the handle, the axe head, and a new strap, is that still Lincoln's hammer? Axe. People also say, like, if you replace every plank on a bridge, on a boat, is it still the same boat? This track basically has almost nothing left over from the original track except for a highly distorted, highly filtered vocal clip. So it's essentially like a 3-minute sample over an entirely new musical bed. Is that a remix or is that just a sample? And I think Ceremony is making a statement. And almost Ceremony's been always making more of a statement with the remix than they have the actual album. How far can they push their sound? How far can they deviate from what they've done? And basically, when is a song still a song and when is it a remix? As I stated before, I wish they put a few more daring things like this on the album, like some weirder stuff on the album, though I did like the album. So I think this is an interesting artistic experiment. And basically, when is a song still a song? When is a remix still a remix? That's interesting. Related, and I don't know if you guys want to get into it or not, is as we talked about, both Pitchfork and both Rolling Stone smashed this album. They pissed on it so bad. Do you guys think critics, especially more popular critics, can they make or break a band? Because famously, way back 10 years ago, Pitchfork famously destroyed Dismemberment Plan when they gave them a 0.0 and it essentially ended the band. The question is, can critics destroy a band, or can a band only allow themselves to be destroyed by the critics if they allow the critics to do so?
Did the 0.0 really destroy that band? That's such like an egregiously bizarre score that it almost feels like it would. It's not.
Well,
it's trying to be provocative. Like I feel that like the death knell for bands is when like Pitchfork gives them a 5 or a 6 or something like that. Where
well, good insight. So true. But however, this is Pitchfork yeah. 10 years ago, not Pitchfork now. Different entity, different animal.
Yeah, so anyways, I think Pitchfork still wields an unusual amount of power in that they can do that sort of thing. And a lot of the times when a band I like shows up on Pitchfork, I'm almost regretting actually going and clicking on the review there, just because like there's a part of me that feels very protectionist about it, and where I'm just thinking leave them alone. Like, go away. You guys go listen to your music over there. Don't touch this band. Like, don't hurt them with your stupid words. Right? Leave them be. So I still feel that way a lot whenever I see, you know, a record or a band that I like show up on Pitchfork and I haven't seen their score yet.
What annoys me about Ceremony is Ceremony, and I mean, you'd have to interview the guys in the band. I haven't interviewed the guys in the band since Zoo, and that got some good press. Where was I going with this? What I was saying? Whether or not, like, Pitchfork has destroyed this band, what I found was annoying was, with Ronet Park and with Zoo, the band had plenty of steam without Pitchfork. Pitchfork did not review Ronet Park. All the punk rock websites reviewed Ronet Park. Everybody loved Ronet Park. Zoo people liked, but they found it challenging. So Pitchfork only got hip to this band after the band already had an established base and was already, you know, essentially a medium-sized to big, you know, medium-sized band or a very big punk band. So is it fair of Pitchfork to come along and destroy, if the band is destroyed, I don't know that they are, to basically cast ruination on a band that already has a good thing going?
I guess the question really is it Pitchfork's responsibility to wield their power in the correct way, or is it the responsibility of like the rest of the music audience to not blow so much smoke up Pitchfork's ass that they have that amount of power?
Yeah, everybody loves the cool kid, even if he's mean. You know what I mean? Actually, people tend to like the mean cool kid more than the nice cool kid.
So, no, I mean, I don't know. I have such a weird relationship with Pitchfork. I'm not a regular reader because they don't tend to talk about stuff that I'm a huge fan of.
I read them every day.
I never read Pitchfork. I can't lie.
Like, I'm not trying to be snobby about that. They're just like, for whatever reason, is not a place that I gravitate to on a daily basis. So, I feel that I am too much having to deal with this sounds totally bad, like the Pitchfork stigma. Like, Pitchfork's reputation is more of a real thing to me than whatever is actually happening on Pitchfork.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't know. It's such a weird thing. I feel bad for Ceremony because, on the one hand, even if you release a record that falls completely flat, and let's say that this new record falls completely flat, well, I would still, it's still a radical departure from what they were doing earlier. And to me, the experiment is to be commended.
Yeah, like, you get bonus points just for doing something damn.
Yeah, like you guys did something weird. Maybe you'll do something different and weird next time. And if no one liked this record, maybe you probably should. But I don't want, like, I don't want you to retreat into, you know, rewriting a record that everyone loved just because no one liked this weird direction. I mean, that's not good. That's no good either. So, I don't know. I don't even know where I'm going with this. Pitchfork is such a weird animal and a thing that we have to deal with. Mark, why don't you play us a song?
Why not? I know the punk news audience loves fake problems. You guys like fake problems, right?
We do. I'm a huge fan of fake problems.
I was going to say, I'm going to take that as a yes. And John, I'll take your silence as a yes, because I love me some fake problems.
I love Anarcho Vespucci. I think Anarcho Vespucci is great.
All right. Well, that's kind of ancillary related. Derek from Fake Problems.
It's the main guy. Well, and Derek, too.
There you go. Derek, bass player for Fake Problems, has a project that he's worked on for a couple of years. It's called Great Neck, and he put out a release about a month and a half ago, I think, on Bandcamp. It's a free release. You can pay what you want, but let's be honest, you're probably not going to pay. And it's kind of a weird record. Like, if you're a fan of Fake Problems and you're going to go check this out thinking it's going to be more of the same, you're really going to be thrown for a loop, because it's just got a lot of weird sounds and a lot of kind of screaming vocals going on with it. And it's supposed to be the soundtrack for some kind of weird detective mystery. The record that they titled it was called, and there's no way I can pronounce this correctly, Esoterra Exorcism, I think it is. And the song that I want to play is called, it's one of the final tracks on the album, and Derek told me it's one of his favorites. It's called Fucking Ponderous. And one other thing that I want to mention was that there's a rumor that there's going to be a Fake Problems 7-inch coming out in early August, so you guys might want to hold on for that as well. But this is Fucking Ponderous by Great Neck. We'll be right back.
All right, we are back. That was great, Nick. Mark, we're just going to leave you at the floor here. Tell us about a Colombian band.
Why not? I used to live in Colombia. For people that don't know, that was my first teaching job. I lived down there in the mid-90s, from the mid to late 90s. And there's a festival.
Why did you leave, Colombia?
I know, right? I kind of got forced to leave, as a matter of fact. And got really dangerous towards the end of my time that I was down there.
There's gangsters messing with you? Really?
Crazy. Well, I mean, just basically every year that I was there, just got a little bit more insecure, and it got to the point where I couldn't leave the city. Trying to leave on a bus and trying to go out of town to go somewhere, it just got really hairy. There was a festival that started while I was down there called Rock al Parque, which was kind of like Fest, but it was stretched out amongst different parks in the city. And these days it's consolidated into one big park, which is actually next to the neighborhood that I used to live in. And it started off as a big local thing, but then it turned into more of an international type of event. And it tracks up to a couple hundred thousand people during the three-day weekend that it goes on. And there's a band that played in some of the early days of that. They haven't been on the bill lately, but they're called 69 Enfermos, or in Spanish would be 69 Enfermos. And if you're into that mid-90s Epitaph, Fat Wreck type of sound, you're really going to like these guys. It's NOFX, it's Lagwagon, it's No Use for a Name. And they basically just took it and they translated it into their own type of thing. And their new album, which is called Beyond Borders, is their first all-English release. And as an English teacher, this really impresses me a lot, because to learn another language is something entirely difficult. But to be able to communicate poetically or musically is something completely different. And to be able to use metaphors, it's a very difficult thing to do. So my hat's totally off to these guys. And I'm really excited to see that a band from basically my second hometown, or what I consider my second hometown, to get a little bit of coverage here on Punk News. I really hope people check them out. 69 Enfermos, they're really good, and I'd love to see them come to the state sometime.
All right, so we are going to talk about, I want to say, one of the weirder stories that has come up in the past week here. So Iggy Pop and Henry Rollins are set to star in a new silent film called Gutter Dammerung, subtitled The Loudest Silent Movie on Earth. The feature is being directed by photographer and video director, Bjorn Tangermos? Tejmos? No, sorry, Bjorn Tejmos. Say that.
Bjorn.
Yeah, by Bjorn. A guy exactly. Named Bjorn.
Bjorn.
You know. Rollins has said that the aim is for the film to be accompanied by a live band, similarly to how period films used a live pianist back when silent films, you know, were a thing, and before the whole talkie, the world we're living in, happened. So anyways, the announcement also describes, Hank here describes Iggy Pop as a horned punk rock angel named Vicious in the film. And another 12 epic rock stars are expected to be announced in the coming weeks. There's actually a little contest right now where if you want to guess who else is going to appear in this film, you can win something or other. You have to go over to the website for Gutter Dammerung to try to do that. But anyways, there's a video trailer here that reveals the fact that that Iggy and Hank are in this. John, this is a weird thing. This is a weird video. This totally seems like a you thing.
Well, one thing, I'm impressed. I don't know who this Bjorn guy is, honestly, but I'm impressed that getting Iggy Pop to do anything is pretty amazing, because it's not like you can just call up Iggy. Like, you know, let me think of it. Like, if you call up the guys from Fake Problems and say, look, we got 15 grand for you, can you come do something? The guys in Fake Problems probably will do that, you know? Iggy Pop, you can't just call up Iggy Pop and say, Iggy, I want you to come do this thing. Like, Iggy Pop has to want to do it. So, it's impressive that they have Iggy Pop doing it. But more than that, it's impressive that he's got Iggy Pop, Henry Rollins, the guy from Eagles of Death Metal, Jesse Hughes. And so, I don't know how this guy has, maybe just because the whole thing is so weird that all these people are interested. You know, once before when they had John Lydon do the Lego Batman voice, maybe it's that kind of thing. It's like, if you call up Iggy Pop and say, will you do my punk rock documentary, Iggy Pop will be like, no. But if you call up and ask Iggy Pop to do something weird, he'll be into it, because Iggy Pop and Henry Rollins are in like these weird artistic endeavors, if you will. That being said, well, there's two things that give me pause, but I think this will be cool. A, I like how it'll be a silent film with a live band playing it. I think that's been done before, but it'll be cool. And it'll just be interesting to see a live band with a movie playing behind it. And that brings to the question, so what are you there to see the band, or are you there to see the movie? You know, which do you focus on more? I guess the movie, but that's cool. And it's kind of cool. I guess, like, the band will have to tour with the movie, which is cool. However, I have two causes for concern, and I'm not being a pessimist. I'm just saying I find this is interesting. First of all, just because you have a lot of great artists or a lot of great actors in something does not mean the final project will be great. In fact, if you have too many great actors, it generally means that the movie is not going to be so great. There's a bunch of Robert De Niro and Al Pacino movies, and they're not that great. However, there's Heat, which is fantastic. Godfather Part II, which is fantastic. So just because you have a star-studded cast, that can almost detract if you have a actually good story. It seems to me, though, that there's a slight falsity in advertising, in that I don't think Henry Rollins or Iggy Pop are really going to be main characters at all. I think there's actually, if you watch the trailer, they show who's really going to be the two main characters. So Henry Rollins might show up for a couple of scenes. Iggy Pop might just show up for a scene.
I had the impression that Jesse Hughes was a really major part of this.
He could be. I don't know. I didn't get that. I got the impression that it's really two people. I'd be interested to know why Henry and Iggy are so into this. I think it's cool that they are. Related is I felt a little manipulated to, like, you know, keep watching every week and won't out which new rock star is in it. Like, I feel as though you're playing with my expectation too much. Just give me the product, man. Or maybe give me a preview and then give me the product. I don't want to follow up every week to see who's going to be in it next. And I gotta say, with Jesse Hughes, man, like, I don't know a whole lot about Eagles of Death Metal, but he uses the F word like every three sentences, and it doesn't make him sound cool or like a rocker. It sounds like he doesn't know how to speak, you know. And I don't know if he would use it to be silly or if that's really how he talks, but like literally every third word is the F word, which I was not impressed with.
I thought it was an act. I thought he was trying to be fun. I don't know. It was striking enough that, like, that if it was not, you know, trying to, I guess, play to type with the fact that this is a crazy rock and roll movie, right? Then yeah, it is pretty weird. But John, I have a far, far more profound question for you.
Mm.
As Henry Rollins is getting a little bit older and is looking maybe a little more gaunt than he did.
Indeed.
Is he starting to look like Morrissey?
Is Henry Rollins looking like Morrissey?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Stop.
You mean, like, sickly, you mean?
No, just not sickly, but, like, at some point, I feel that, like, Henry Rollins and Morrissey, you could start to smoosh them into the same person if, you know...
Stop.
One of them is in... You know, if Henry loses a little bit of weight and lets his hair get a little bit crazy, and maybe Morrissey healthies up a little bit, somewhere in the middle, there is a merged being, I'm convinced.
You're right, and that's ironic because Henry Rollins has a famous spoken word piece where he talks about how much he hates Morrissey. It might even be called Kill Morrissey. And you know what? They have very similar hairstyles.
I'm saying I saw it during this YouTube video, and I was like, holy fuck, Hank kind of looks like Morrissey. I don't know what to do with this information.
You know why? Because they have the exact same shape head. They have about the same body type. You know, and the same hairstyle, and also like the same darkish features. I wonder if Henry Rollins is part
Irish Morrissey
and English. I think part maybe he is part. Maybe he's Morrissey's brother. You don't know, but I agree with that, Adam. And I enjoy both artists, and I am similarly rankled by both artists at the same time. I support this.
Hank, if you're listening to this, I just want you to know that Mark Little has nothing to do with that statement.
I'm not saying that. I don't know what I'm saying. Whatever. Come at me, Hank.
Hank, that's Adam White.
Yeah.
Adam White is the one that said that.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of Henry Rollins' later days insistence on wearing dirty undershirts all the time?
I support it.
You should. Why? For what reason?
I don't know.
He doesn't care.
If I'm when I get to be like Henry Rollins' age, if I can, like, you know, be as, you know, fit and wearing a dirty T-shirt respectably as Henry Rollins, then I've made it.
See, but I like George Clinton is wearing like really sharp suits these days, and he looks really cool. Or like Lee Scratch Perry just wears like random.
Yeah, but I'm just looking for what I can aspire to. I cannot become George Clinton. There's no course in my life where I'm going to take where I can be in the position where I'm George Clinton.
You can start doing a lot of cocaine if you do that, Adam.
I don't know. I think it might that I don't have the tolerance. It would kill me. So that ain't going to happen. I could, at the very least, you know, live the fantasy that I'm going to lift a bunch of weights and be awesome, and then I can be Henry Rollins.
Well, true. Very, very true. If I may...
Just drink black coffee and stare at the walls, Adam.
I do that now.
If I may make...
You're already there.
I know.
If I may make a quick observation as to George Clinton, the reason why I think drugs did not destroy George Clinton like they destroyed so many other artists, and Keith Richards too, is I don't think that Keith Richards or George Clinton ever did drugs because they were depressed. I think George Clinton and Keith Richards just did drugs because they loved doing drugs, and that's why like, they never OD'd. They never felt they had to black anything out. They just really enjoyed being high. And that's my completely uneducated guess as to why Keith Richards is still amazing and why George Clinton is still amazing and why George Clinton, despite decades of doing heavy, heavy, heavy drugs, now that he stopped, is as sharp as he ever was.
That's a good theory. I don't know if I would want to test that theory or anything, but that's a good theory.
Mark, you're a Henry Rollins fan. What do you are you excited for this? What do you think it's going to be? Do you think it's going to be cool?
I'm a big Henry Rollins fan, and when I saw this trailer, I was pretty doubtful when I first saw it. But after I checked it out, I gotta say this sounds really, really cool. Although I'm kind of curious how they're gonna pull it off as far as the band touring with the movie. I mean, that couldn't be something that's being released in many cities at one time unless they got five bands in five different cities.
Yeah, so they might do like an orchestra, like maybe like different bands do it. You know, like it's music that whoever plays it, you know.
Sure, but I can also see where part of the appeal would also be knowing that there are certain musicians, even if they're not named musicians, but knowing there's a certain band that's going to be there playing, you know, the music for it. I think this would be really cool, and I think it would be – having a band there would make it an event, and not being old enough to have gone to silent movies in the 20s, even though some commenters on the website think otherwise – I think it'd be really cool to have that experience of that kind of movie. I'm curious to see what roles they have in there, and I'm really curious to see what role Grace Jones has in the movie as well.
Oh, yeah, Grace Jones! You know, the kids might not know who Grace Jones is. Grace Jones is a fascinating woman. Grace Jones is she was basically a super famous model in the 80s, late 70s. She's still a model. She also put out some albums in the 80s, mostly like dance music. She put out a couple albums, or maybe just one with Sly and Robbie, reggae fame, bass and drum duo. And the interesting thing about Grace Jones, Adam and Mark, do you know what Grace Jones' diet consists of? And Grace Jones is like 65 now, and she still looks pretty good. Do you guys know what Grace Jones' diet consists solely of? She only eats two things.
Hold on, I have this on my phone. No, I don't. Okay, what?
Oysters and strawberries. That's the only thing Grace Jones eats.
How do you know this?
Would that provide all the nutrition you need to not die?
It does if you're Grace Jones. Like,
apparently it's enough to be Grace Jones.
Like, if you go to a Grace Jones model shoot, you'll just see trays and trays of oysters and strawberries. And apparently she eats a lot of oysters. And I know this because there's a very fascinating interview out there from just like 2 years ago where it's a profile on Grace Jones. And the writer just talks about how the only thing she eats, and she says this, is oysters and strawberries. And it's the only thing she eats.
I'm Googling this because I want to confirm this.
So am I.
This does not feel like...
Well, while these fools are Googling it, let me tell you guys about something else that's awesome. The Damned. One of the first three English punk rock bands, along with The Clash and The Sex Pistols. First punk rock band to put out a 7-inch. First punk rock band to put out an album. First punk rock band to break up. First punk rock band to play the USA from Britain. But Damned, they've announced their 40th anniversary show. The 40th anniversary show will take place at the Royal Albert Hall, a very famous English venue, on May 20, 2016. The band hasn't really said what's going to happen, but Dave Vanian said, expect the unexpected, and Captain Sensible said they're going to shine a light around the darkest corners of the discography. Right now, The Damned includes Dave Vanian and Captain Sensible, two original Damned guys, and three newer Damned guys. So the question, and one guy is actually like 75 and he plays the keyboard, and he's awesome. It's so cool. The whole, actually, I've seen this version of The Damned three times. It's a phenomenal show. But here's the question. Do you guys love The Damned? Does The Damned get enough credit in USA? I say no. I think The Damned should get more credit in the USA. And lastly, do you guys think original Damned guitar player Brian James will be there? Will Roman Jug be there? Will the dozens of people that have been in The Damned be there? Or should they? Like, would Brian James being there be cool, or was Brian James kind of just the guy that wrote the first album but didn't really do much after that?
You asked, like, seven questions. So, I mean, The Damned don't at all get enough credit. It's a band that I think everyone is aware of when they start to get into, you know, when they start to get into punk rock and they start to learn who the founders were and who they should be, you know, at least aware of, so they sound like they know what they're talking about. You know, the Damned is absolutely forever on that list, but I feel that really people may have heard, you know, Machine Gun Etiquette, they may have heard, you know, Damned Now Damned or anything like that, but they don't. I don't feel like anyone delves into the Damned to the degree that they delve into, you know, other bands from that era. And I don't really know why. And I, like, really myself included, like, I'm familiar with the band's earliest stuff, but I don't think that I've definitely not followed the Damned's career.
I know why. Because the Clash is very easy to define their career. The Damned broke up and got back together a whole bunch of times and put out tons of albums. It's hard to define the Damned's career.
Yeah, but, you know, absolutely, I think they deserve more credit than we give them. They deserve more attention than we give them, although that can be said about, like, every 70s-era punk band at this point in the game, so.
And, John, I think that's a really good point, what you just said about how, you know, they put out so many records, but people pigeonhole them to be at a certain point. Because I'm definitely guilty of that. When I think of the Damned, I definitely think of late 70s, very, very early 80s. I mean, I really don't think of the band playing out through the 90s and over the last decade. And I know they put out records as well, but that's just something I've never, ever thought about. I think you're absolutely right. They don't get the credit they deserve in this part of the world.
You know, I'm glad we're closing out tonight's episode with the Damned, because you could argue, look at the Clash too, but the Damned are one of the very first experimental punk rock bands. The Damned were right there, you know, the first wave of punk. Damned is a straight up UK 77 punk rock classic. I mean, it is punk. But then pretty much immediately afterwards, they start doing weird stuff. Machine Gun Etiquette, the Black album, which has a Hans Zimmerman track. It's like 20 minutes long. They kind of created goth with the next album, which was a Phantasmagorium. And actually, Black Album's credit is creating goth as well. So the Damned are an extreme experimental band. If you're a listener out there and you don't know much about the Damned, check out the albums in the following order. First, check out Machine Gun Etiquette, phenomenal album. Then check out Damned, their debut. Then, actually, you know, check out Damned first, and then check out Machine Gun Etiquette. Then check out the Black Album, not Metallica's Black Album, the Damned's Black Album, which is way before Metallica. And then check out Strawberries. After that, it's kind of hit or miss. Oh, actually, Phantasmagorium is a really good album, too. They got some okay... They don't have any bad albums. They've got some okay albums, but Damned is phenomenal. Machine Gun Etiquette is phenomenal. Black Album is phenomenal. Strawberries and Phantasmagorium are very, very good. But those three... If you got to check out three, check out Damned, Machine Gun Etiquette, Black Album. Amazing, amazing albums.
And also, to your point where you're asking about what they were going to do for their 40th anniversary show and about people that may be showing up, I think it would be a shame if they didn't have Brian James and if they didn't have previous members that had been there.
They had a 20th anniversary show, and it was released on CD. It was originally a bootleg, and it got released as kind of a shitty official recording. Just because the show's good, the sound quality's bad. They did bring back Brian James. It's called the Molten Lager album, and Brian James is on that. And actually, I think pretty much all the major Damned guys are on that album. So there's precedent of the Damned doing that before. So maybe they'll do that again. That would be cool. I don't know, man. I'm vaguely considering flying out for this.
I'd like to circle back to our earlier discussion here. This is from an article in The Guardian in 2010. I'm just going to hop to the relevant paragraph. In the old days, the rumor was that Jones lived on cocaine and oysters. These days, her friends say that she sticks to red wine, sushi, and oysters, and that's the secret of her endless youth. She laughs when I mention it. She says that I've got it all wrong. You don't do oysters and red wine together. That's a no-no. You don't do that. I love a nice white wine with oysters. If you notice, I'm not eating oysters yet. I have oysters for energy. Oysters also take you out of depression. It's an aphrodisiac, sweetheart. Didn't you know that? You have 4 dozen, sweetie, and you'll be running around looking for anything hot. Bring them on. Woohoo! You'll be howling at the moon.
There you have it.
There you go. 4 dozen oysters.
So... If you're not depressed and you do cocaine, you can recover. But if you really want longevity, eat 4 dozen oysters with Grace Jones.
I'm down.
Let's do it. Let's call Grace Jones, just to, like, eat oysters.
You'd be like, Grace Jones, I'm at Panera. Bring the oyster.
She's like, oh, no, I'll only eat oysters at Tim Hortons. Mm. I demand their coffee.
It is like cocaine. There's probably cocaine in it. All right. Is that it? Do we have more songs? What are we doing here?
Play something, Adam. Play something.
Wait, no. I was going to not play something. That's how I wanted to end this show.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, all right. So I'm going to not play a song to end this show, only because this band has two songs Each of them are about 5-6 minutes long, and it felt a little bit disingenuous to take basically half this band's catalog and instead of telling you to go buy it, play it on the podcast. But as you'll quickly see, this is super relevant to my interest. So three guys, members of the Toronto bands Holy Fuck, in this, the case it is Brian Borchard, sorry, I can't pronounce names, guitarist, vocalist, and I guess he's producing some of the beats for the band. You have Alex Edkins from Metz, and we've talked about Metz. Everyone likes Metz. They're on Sub Pop. They had a record that came out this year. It was really good. And drummer Doug McGregor of the Constantines, which is a band that I super love. Everyone knows that. They have formed this weird little three-person supergroup called Lids. They have a 7-inch that's out right now on the label Telephone Explosion. Two songs are on the thing. One is called SARSFest, and one is called Blank Flag. And it's just, it's cool. It's crazy, psychedelic. It's synthy and droning, and it's, you know, you can definitely hear the influence of Holy Fuck in there, which is of course like an experimental electronic act a lot of the time, but like to me there's, you know, you've got a little bit of Public Image Limited into this. You've got, you know, definitely a little bit of, let's say, really early Primal Scream when they were starting to just get into the house music thing. It's a weird record, and it's cool. You should go check it out. The band is called Lids. You can find them over on Bandcamp or SoundCloud or wherever else. So yeah, go stream one or both of the songs from this thing. It's weird stuff, and it features a lot of people from bands that I like. So I'm just gonna leave you with that, world. Go check that out. But I'm not gonna play one here because I'm a gentleman. I don't know why I'm pausing, because we can just keep going. So yeah, that was the Punk News Podcast. If you want to write us, podcast@punknews.org is the address. You can find all of us on Twitter. I'm at Adam White. John Gentile is at John Gentile. And Mark Little, what are you on Twitter?
At Mr. Spike.
At Mr. Spike. M-R or Mr.?
M-I-S-T-E-R.
There you go. So that's it. Any parting words, John, from Panera there? Are you going to be back in your studio, or are you going to start just, you know, pick a different fast food restaurant to hang out in front of?
Maybe I'll do that for ambiance. My parting words is listen to The Damned. They're amazing. That's my parting words.
John, I think next time you should try to cross the border and do it from a Tim Hortons parking lot.
The fact that this is at all a thing of interest to you is weird. It's like air up here. So anyways, that's it. That's Punk News Podcast. See you guys next week.